The universe has a strange way of connecting us all in ways that at times seem divinely orchestrated and at others feels completely chaotic and random. Regardless of how it chooses to connect us, the universe, aka spirit, is intentional, timely, and unfathomably precise and accurate in its execution. I was connected to today's guest of the Death and Grief Cot. The Death and Grief Talk podcast, Christina Christiansen, in a way that feels equally divine and random. Christina is a filmmaker based in Los Angeles, California. She's produced, directed, and written a bit of everything from documentaries and music videos to art installations and talk shows. I had the honor of experiencing Christina exercising her passion for storytelling through the medium of film on the set of a documentary she's producing about the death care industry. In between shooting with her in LA, we had a chance to share an intimate moment over dinner in which she shared the heart-touching and heartbreaking story behind her newest passion project. During our time together in this podcast episode, Christina and I discuss everything from the way spirit speaks to us and guides us, how telling stories about life and death and those who work in the death care industry has assisted her in navigating her personal grief, to the current SAG-AFTRA strike and its true impact on the creators and the viewers of the stories they write, perform, and tell us daily. Hello, Christina. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm excellent. I just want to say thank you for spending this time with me. You and I met in a very unique way. And I just said I wasn't going to talk about this, and here I go already talking about it. But I met you through recording a documentary that you are producing. That's your...
Yes.
Okay, thank you. But since that time, you have released your own film. And so before we get into Hello, Brandon, I just want to give you a second to introduce yourself. Tell us how we got, or you got into the world of film, and we'll go from there.
Yes, we did meet in quite a unique way, which I'm also excited to talk about. But hello, everyone. My name is Christina. I am a filmmaker based in Los Angeles. And so this story... The documentary is called Dear Brandon, and it's called Dear Brandon because it's based off of a letter that I came across while hiking in Hawaii back in May of 2021. A little bit of backstory leading up to May of 2021, like everyone else, was sitting with myself in quarantine and did a lot of inner work. And part of that inner work was just really being cognizant on gratitude. And one of the things I found myself most grateful for was just my ability to move my body, to go on walks, to go outside. And in May of 2021, when we went on this hike in Hawaii, we get up to the top of this trail and I'm just full of that gratitude of being able to be here. My friend sees a piece of paper under a rock that says, "Please read me." She's like, "What's that?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Let's see." And we open up this piece of paper and it turns out that it's a letter and it says, "Hello, my name is Brandon. I'm from Sandy, Utah. If you happen to be reading this, I want you to know I believe it's for a reason. I want to share my story with you." Mm-hmm. And we go from there. And he goes on to explain in this letter that he was diagnosed with MS in 1999. And prior to that diagnosis, he was really active in outdoor sports and just loved being outside. And now he found himself at the end of his life on hospice with this feeling that there was more to give. And the only thing he felt he had to give was love. So he just put it in this letter. And this letter was just filled with a bunch of his life's lessons and regrets. And at the end, he said, "You know, if you could do me a favor and be my arms and legs, take a photo of the view, because I would love to see it, and text it to me. And if you feel compelled, also share a bit of your story." And I wept, and then I texted him. And to my surprise and to his, he was still alive. So that's how we got this going.
Being unbelievable. You're walking, hiking in Hawaii, and you find this letter. And for all you know, it could have been like
a confession letter for some heinous act or a plea for help from someone that was lost in the woods, but it's a petition to spread love. And I know just based on talking to you personally, you were also going through a lot yourself that led maybe to some of those tears. Do you care to get into some of that?
Yeah, of course. I'm all about being vulnerable. I love Brené Brown. So funny enough, at that point, I had not really entered the storm that I was going to be entering. At that point, I will say things were going quite well in every aspect of life. And I, again, was just very grateful for that. And I, of course, was aware that life is a bunch of waves, you know, it ebbs and flows. So I knew that, of course, that would change at some point. But certainly at the time of meeting Brandon, reading his letter, I was not necessarily experiencing any of that. But the following year, starting in the beginning of 2022, I started to experience back-to-back losses, both in my professional life with colleagues who had passed away suddenly, another colleague that I think a month and a half later had taken their own life. Then maybe a month after that, I went home to Houston to go visit my family and do a trip with my parents to go to Utah to visit the rest of our family. And the day that I landed, I remember I saw my dad and I was like, oh, something's not right. I don't know what it is, but something's not right. And 6 weeks later, he passed away from stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And yeah, all this entire time I was filming with Brandon, working with Brandon, and also just, he became truly one of my closest friends. And it was so interesting because on my end, I wanted to not talk about death with him because his mortality was so obvious to him. Why would I sit there and bother him with what I was going through? But actually, he ended up being the best person to talk to about everything, but especially this. And he never made me feel guilty. He actually leaned into those conversations with me, and I am forever grateful for that. So yes, I have since then experienced a lot of death and loss and grief, and I've been really immersed in it unwillingly, as we all are, in a way that felt really unique, but maybe it's not. I was dealing with the anticipatory grief and also compounding grief, back-to-back grief, and also seeing a lot of different ways in which people were dealing with their losses, which I think in a way perfectly teed me up to work on the feature documentary that we met on, which was also about death, because it gave me this unique perspective that was very fresh about not only losing someone close to me and going through that experience of how do you plan a funeral? What does this mean? But then also attending other people's send-offs and seeing how they were doing it. And it was really interesting to see how the two aligned.
I'm so interested. Prior to the documentary and prior to Dear Brandon, had you given any real thought to, okay, your mortality, but what you wanted to happen to your body after you passed away, how you might respond to the loss of a loved one, or how death and grief was truly affecting the world around you, because it maybe wasn't impacting you directly?
Yeah, I don't know that I thought too much about what I wanted to happen to me, mm-hmm. other than I'm probably had some thoughts about who might show up, you know, if there was any sort of event, if there should be an event, you know, at all, what that would be. Would it be a party, you know, all that. And prior to that, I did have other major losses. They were just spread out in a way that I could navigate them a bit better, I would say. The first one, which was, I would say to this day, probably the hardest, was my maternal grandmother, because she was like a mother to me. I was obsessed from the day I was born. She was obsessed with me. I went to work with her every single day. It was just one of those bonds that just was very, in my mind, very unique and very strong. And so that one really hit me for a few reasons, not only for the fact that she was so close to me, But also she was, I grew up in the Bible Belt. She was Southern Baptist and very devout Southern Baptist woman. And also just in her character, just a good person. Just, I mean, would have kids who were unhoused in the neighborhood come and stay at her house or come by for a meal. She was volunteering all the time. She just was a big member of the community. And I would fall asleep at night hearing her pray. In the morning, I'd hear her singing hymns. Like, I mean, you know, so she was just good, you know. And when she started to get sick from dementia, if anyone's familiar with what happens towards the end, you're reduced pretty much to those fundamental thoughts and those fundamental actions. And for her, it was singing a gospel. It was, "Oh, precious Lord, take my hand." Mm. And there was something about seeing someone who was so committed to this belief system. And at the time, I was young and naive. And I thought, okay, well, if you believe these things, that means that your death is going to be chill. I didn't think that that would not excuse a person from experiencing a pretty, in my mind, torturous way to go, because it was slow and it was not that death is ever going to come in a way that's necessarily kind, but I mean, I just thought it might be a little bit kinder to her. And so that was very, that was my canon event, if you will. I was very mad when that happened, and it made me question everything, and I needed to question everything. But I will say that's when my whole gratitude practice started, because someone told me, find what you can be grateful for in this moment. And that made me even more angry, because I was like, how the hell can I be grateful for my favorite human being dying? That doesn't make sense. But I did do that, and I forced it for a bit. And then eventually, of course, now I see in hindsight that there was so many things about that specific loss that led me to being the person that I am today, which is someone that I like a lot more. And I've also lost my college best friend, passed away a few years after college. So I've experienced varying degrees of loss leading up to it. And I had thought about death, but I definitely was not thinking about it as consciously as I do now, I would say.
Definitely. So just to circle back to Brandon, how many people have read his letter? Well, before I even ask that, what was it like walking into the room and seeing him for the first time after reading this letter? And I imagine having some grasp of the impact that that simple letter on a trail in Hawaii, and I imagine passed throughout other parks and trails throughout the world. What did it feel like to meet him for the first time? I imagine just from your expression and from the stories that you've shared thus far that he filled up the room, even though he was leaving the room at the same time.
That's exactly it. He filled up the room. He filled up the space. And I met him obviously over the phone in May of 2021, but I didn't get a chance to meet him in person until I think October. Leading up to that, we had done a few Zooms. But it's funny that you mentioned that, because the opening of our campaign trailer is actually that moment where I met him. What we didn't include, but will it probably end up being in the documentary, is leading up to that, I was so nervous. And I don't know why, because we were friends for months at that point, and there was no reason to be nervous, but I was just so nervous. And I think it's because I was excited, and maybe I was confusing the two emotions. But yeah, oh man, so nervous. And then when we finally, his mom came outside actually, and she greeted us. And as soon as she walked outside, I immediately just felt like I was at home. I felt like I was visiting some extended family, and it no longer felt like this thing to be scared or nervous about. It was just like, oh, you're coming to visit your family. And we go inside, meet the dog, walk into his room. And I was just so excited. I felt and looked like a child. So if people watch the campaign, you'll see I'm going like this, because I'm just so excited that I just met him in person and that I was going to get to spend some time with him.
That's beautiful. I've noticed just in my line of work, when people are grieving and when people are at the end of their lives, I feel like you meet the real them. You meet the version of them that the pretentiousness, the facade, the BS, the struggle, it's like gone. It seems like they're in a place where it's like, this is me, take it or leave it. And for some reason, it's almost like they can see right through you. What do you think that Brandon saw and felt within you that allowed him to allow you in so much to that intimate space of literally his dying bed?
I think that's such a great question, because as much as I'd like to feel unique in my relationship with Brandon, he did that with every single person that reached out to him. Mm-hmm. I just happened to be the person who had a camera and is doing this documentary. That is the only thing, honestly, that separates me from the hundreds of other people who connected with him. I will say, there were some things that he had said in his letter about being impeccable with your word. Just different fundamental things that he wanted to pass on that really resonated specifically. And then I will say, once we met, what's funny is that as we got to know each other and I got to meet his family and see how he was interacting with everyone, we noticed so many similarities and where we kind of stand within our own family dynamics, which I thought was really interesting. Being, you know, the sibling that might have been a little bit more, not the good kid, but like the one that's like not being a problem all the time, I guess, you know, things like that. We also really, really bonded on our lack of ability to ask for help, which was interesting to talk about because he was then in a position where he does have to ask for help for absolutely everything he does. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if what the specific thing was that he saw that allowed him to let me in that intimate way of making this documentary, but I'm so grateful. And I don't know what it is. I probably should have asked him that, but I think maybe he just, my first message to him was very open. It was not like, hey, Brandon, saw your letter, here's a photo. It was like, I thought this man was already dead. So mm-hmm. I thought I was texting a number that was not going to get a response because it was 3,000 miles away. I'm like, how, if this guy's in hospice, there is no way this man's alive. So I texted the letter with my genuine response, which was very, I have it online if people want to read it, but it was very open and honest about where I was in my own journey and how that letter had impacted me. And he did tell me that when he read it, he had his mom come in the room and they read it together and cried. And I think there was just something about that first contact that was immediately open and honest, and it was not holding anything back. And maybe he appreciated that because that's exactly what he did with his letter, was he was open and honest and vulnerable. And I think we just mirrored each other in that way.
I remember sitting down and having dinner with you in May. And I think it was May or April. I don't remember.
I think so.
And,
yeah.
We were having a conversation about just like our beliefs about the way the world works. And I remember telling you, you know, I'm into the numbers and your telephone number three of the digits happen to be my birthday. And, you know, even being at this hotel and like just these things that seem like woo-ha, you know. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, I kind of just don't see things that way. I just kind of see them differently. And listening to you tell this story is comical to me because I see it as exactly what you're saying you don't believe, or at that time you didn't really believe or kind of understand, which is there is destiny. There is 100%, like, we end up in these places for certain reasons at certain times, and they are exactly for us in that moment. And I guess my question is, what was this part of your journey, the Dear Brandon part of your journey? What has it been for you? How has it changed your life?
Oh, how has it not changed my life? That's a simpler question, I guess. But so going back on the synchronicity thing, I have experienced synchronicities, and there's been so many synchronicities in this project alone, down to the fact that Brandon first received a response to that letter on September 22nd of 2020. Mm-hmm. He ended up living exactly 2 years to the date. He died September 22nd, 2022. And our campaign is ending September 22nd, 2023. So I am not sitting here to deny any kind of synchronicity. I, even before that was, and that's how we got into the conversation about numbers, was I see 11 minutes after the hour all the time without fail. And I think that I can easily buy into it. I mean, the first line of his, or the first paragraph of his letter says, if you happen to be reading this, I believe it's for a reason. And a lot of the people that I interviewed also said it was for a reason. And they had, what was interesting was everyone had a different story, but it was fundamentally the same. So for me, it's more so that I think that with luck, my interpretation of luck is preparation meets opportunity. And I think that having left the letter on many mountaintops and seen people not pick up the letter or read a few sentences and put it down means that they did not have the preparation of life experience to be open to receiving his message. So yes, there could be things fated for you. At the same time, I think it goes both ways. If you are not ready to receive a thing, then it'll come back around another way, I'm sure, hopefully. But not everyone's ready to accept that. And also, there's an element to this that if you agree to interact with Brandon, you're agreeing to a very clear thing that's going to happen with every relationship in your life, which is that it's going to end. Mm-hmm. It's just more obvious with him that it's going to end soon. And you can't deny it because talking to him means that you see a person on their deathbed. So I guess where this project fits into my current life story is it's helped anchor me through a time that's been really, really difficult. Not even just with the obvious losses of people dying in my life, but there's just been so much change since 2020 for all of us. And specifically in this year for myself, there's been even more change and for a lot of entertainment workers because we're sitting on, I think, day 120 of a union strike because people just want to be paid fairly, which, what a wild concept. And that has affected all of our working lives. You know, we've gone from being these constantly on the go, never at home freelancers to sitting at home wondering, am I going to be able to afford to stay in this city that I have spent the last decade building a career in? So there's been a lot of just, there's so much thrown in the air right now, but I'm so grateful that I have Brandon as a reminder, and I've had him as a reminder that this is just in this moment. And there are so many things that I can look out and be grateful for. And it just, it grounds me because at the end of the day, I'm like, I was part of something really special for someone. And regardless of what's happening in this moment, that is enough for me. This project has been so fulfilling. Even if the documentary never sees the light of day, just meeting Brandon and meeting his family, everyone else involved in this project was so remarkably fulfilling. I'm good. And I even told Brandon that. I was like, meeting you has been the highlight of my life thus far. This lesson that he, the love that he gave was unmatched by, I think, any other person I've ever met. And I think it's because he was able to give that to people. When you are on your deathbed and you are quadriplegic and you can't move, the only thing you have is connection. And so he was just a really good friend. And I will never hold anyone to the standard of that, because that was his, that's what he did every day, all day, was talk to people. I just feel very grateful to have been in the line of view of someone who was so willing to give care and love to others. And I'm not sure that I'll ever experience that again. I don't know how I would, because it felt so unique and special. So I guess that's where this project fits in my life now, is it helps me just stay very grounded through the lows, but also the highs. Like it just keeps me stable a bit.
I love that. You mentioned something that I didn't even think about touching on, which is the, I don't even know what to call it, but like, is it a strike? It's a strike in Hollywood and in television and production. And it spans out into so many different areas, but my question is, how, like, I've met you, right? And I've seen you work professionally. That's how I know you professionally, right? And I've seen the passion and the research and the sacrifice that you've made in order to tell stories. How is it that anyone thinks that a computer or a chat GPT or an artificial essence can create that level of connection that you're telling through this story, Dear Brandon?
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure how that is possible. Look, AI is the big hot button issue and topic that I think everyone is aware of within the strike, but it does go beyond that.
Okay.
It's, you know, making sure that people are fed if they've walked onto a set, that they've been fed every 6 hours, that they're not working 20 hours a day, or, you know, it's just basic fundamental things that they're asking for, actually. I mean, there was an article that came out recently about the show Suits that's been on Netflix for a little bit now, and it actually has billions of streams. It's breaking records, right? And collectively, not one, collectively, the writers of that show have made $3,000 collectively. And Netflix has streamed, people have streamed that 8-season show millions of times. So yes, it is about AI, but it is also about the fact that right now, the structure of payment does not take into consideration streaming and the technologies that are to come. And the same thing happened with DVDs. When DVDs became a thing, there was another strike. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as long as this one, but it was the same thing fundamentally, just saying like, hey, we haven't checked in a while. Cost of living is up and we do things a bit differently. We need to make sure that our contracts reflect that. So when it comes to the AI, I've kind of transitioned from being terrified of it and being anti-AI and like, let's just stay away, let's keep it out, to more recently understanding that it's going to happen regardless. Let's see how we can embrace it and use it for storytelling in a way that's ethical and makes sense. So for example, in documentary specifically, there are programs and people thinking about ways that we can use AI to replace faces and protect identities in a creative way that's not just blurring them out, but they can still share their story, right? So it's still entertaining. Or say someone passes away and you didn't finish the film, but you still need something like a soundbite that you know that they said, or you got it, but it didn't sound right. Well, now there's AI technology that can listen to about 20 words of any person's voice, and you can have that person say whatever you want. It's dangerous and it needs parameters, but it's possible. So there are ways to look at this technology as a tool versus a replacement. And as far as being a storyteller, thank you so much. I love what I do. And for me, storytelling is a compulsion. It's not something that I'm like, I want to go and struggle to tell a story. No. Even on the campaign page, I have a screenshot of the first like short documentary I ever did when I was a kid. And I interviewed my pastor, keeping things on brand as being a little Baptist girl. But I interviewed my pastor, who also happened to be a really big civil rights activist in Houston. And I was so excited. There's something about that experience that just fueled me, and it still fuels me. And I am so grateful I have that footage, because in times like now, it's another one of those things that reminds me, yes, I want fair wage, but I'm not doing this necessarily to make money. I would love to be able to support myself while doing the thing that I love. But I think no matter what, I will always be telling stories, whether I'm doing it professionally or not. It's something that I feel compelled to do and just called to do. I've never been able to explain it, but I have had a camera in my hand from day one, and I've been documenting everything around me for better or worse. So I don't think the AI can replace that compulsion. And I'm also open to being wrong about that, which is why I'm so happy that they are striking, because I could be wrong. I could be wrong that there could be some kind of AI that can do exactly what I do and maybe do it better. But why? Because why? I think our stories that come from real human experience are valuable. So I wish them all the best as they're out there.
I don't think that it can replace you or do it better. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm not, you know, I tell different stories, but I don't see that happening. I have a wild card question for you. Like you, Brandon's family, and so many of us that have lost people that are close to us, the stories about them are what, I don't want to say help us get through our grief, but it's almost like a balm to our grief. You know, we sit down at funerals, we listen to the stories that people have to tell, and they make us feel connected and, you know, keep our loved ones alive, so to speak. What do you want the story to be that people share about you?
I hope that the people in my life know that just how deeply I care about them. That's really it. I hope that they understand or think that I have a good heart and that I care about them. That's pretty much it. I try not to worry too much about what people think or whatever, but as far as the people that are close to me and the people I interact with every day, I would hope that they know that my intentions are always good. I can't help it. Again, it's that fundamental growing up in the church that my sister and I joke about this all the time, where we're like, oh, I had this thought and like, am I a bad person? And we're like, no, it's just thought, you're good. So I just hope that I'm remembered for being someone who just really cared about others. And then going to your point about story, I think story is so powerful. And this documentary is a great example of that, because I think that it's people sharing their stories with Brandon that extended his life for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Something that we didn't mention is that when that letter was written, he was gray. They thought he was going to be dead in a week and a half. Like, he was going. And Brenna, his social worker, said in her interview that she remembers the day that they got that first response. He called her and she said it felt like he turned back on. Mm-hmm. And he actually got taken off of hospice, I think about 8 months after that first letter, because he started gaining weight. He was no longer losing weight and declining. I mean, he was declining in other ways, but not in ways that I guess would require him to stay with the same level of hospice care. And I guess in the States, you probably know this better than me, but in the States, you only get so many months of hospice care. And because he was not declining as rapidly, they started to pull back on some of the benefits. But that was, in my mind, purely because people were sharing stories with him. We are social creatures. All we do all day long is tell ourselves our own story and listen to each other's stories. That's all we do. So stories are very, very, very powerful. And I am very grateful to have witnessed such an affirming example of that.
Thank you so much for your time, Christina, and for sharing Dear Brandon and about yourself. How can listeners support Dear Brandon?
Thank you. I'm so excited that I got to talk with you. And I'm so excited to talk about our other documentary at some point in the future. You can learn more about this specific documentary by visiting our crowdfunding campaign, which is at seedandspark.com/fund/Brandon. We are doing a 30-day campaign to raise finishing funds to get the project edited and also submitted to film festivals. And as we mentioned with the strikes, I just want to make sure that our team is paid appropriately. It's not anyone's regular rate, but it's something that will help them, you know, survive through these times. And the other way, in case you are listening to this after September 22nd, 2023, is by visiting my website, christinachristiansen.com/Brandon, where we will be just transferring everything over, including a donation link, if you'd like to be involved. And that's where you can get all the information. And then I guess as far as social media, you can follow Brandon's Instagram at Brandon's Love. Sorry, no, actually it's at for Brandon's Love 77. And my Instagram is Christina Olivia, KrystinaOlivia.
Links to everything will be in the description bar below this podcast episode. Thank you so much again, Christina, for your time and for your work and for telling stories that need to be told and that people need to hear.
Thank you so much. And thank you for everything that you do. We love you. Like, we really do. We're always singing your praises as we're editing this film. So I'm so excited for the world to get to know you and all the wisdom that you have to share.
Thank you. And thank you, each and every one of you, for listening. Live life, love hard. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Death and Grief Talk podcast. To learn more, visit www.thegravewoman.com.